This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
You're listening to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My name is Alan Scott. This is the place where government actions come face-to-face with business decisions, both online and on the air, right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And this week, lots of moving parts. A pretty busy week, if you ask me. One of the only things that really hasn't changed is the launch of healthcare.gov. Back in March of 2010, President Obama signed the Affordable Care Act, the law that puts in place insurance reforms that'll roll out over the next 4 years. Well, the opportunity to sign up is now open. Earlier this week, healthcare.gov came online, and with, I won't say a fanfare, but I guess there was a bit of a fanfare. Joining me here to discuss this and the furloughs and such are two gentlemen who are very close to the situation, senior healthcare analysts Peter Gosling and Matt Berry. Gentlemen, thanks for being here.
Good to be here.
Thanks for having us.
So let's take it back a little bit. Obviously, this launching of this Affordable Care Act was tied to a continuing resolution that has done some damage to the government. We'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, although the tie's the other way around, which is that the Affordable Care Act's been around now for 3+ years.
Thank you.
Opponents of the law lashed it to a continuing resolution, basically said they wouldn't pay to keep the government going if they had to pay for funding a law that's been on the books and found constitutional.
Right. So time comes along, the site launches, the continuing resolution fails, obviously. They don't want to pass it. The House is saying it's not going to happen. The president in no way is going to sign anything, even if it did, because it doesn't meet what he's already set forth. And now we've got this wonderful Affordable Care Act. What is so special about the fact that this is now available to all Americans? Would that be safe to say it's available to everybody, obviously?
Well, technically, yes, it's available to everybody, but it really depends on, you know, whether you currently have insurance. If you currently get your insurance through an employer or something like that, you don't have to do anything today. It's for those individuals who have been uninsured, who lose that employer insurance, otherwise are, you know, very low incomes. Those are the targets for the insurance right now.
The way in which this law is for all Americans is as a fallback. I mean, it is not going to be the center of gravity of the insurance system, the health insurance system for working age Americans. That continues to be employer sponsored insurance. But the world of employer sponsored insurance is changing, it's fraying, and so it's ever more important for Americans, even Americans that now have very good insurance, to have this fallback. The fallback is first and foremost for people, families between, say, $30,000 and $95,000. It provides them a place to shop for insurance, but it also provides them subsidies to help them buy it. The simple fact is health insurance, anything coming close to comprehensive health insurance, is unaffordable by most Americans. So either the government is going to have to step in and provide the care directly or help finance it. And that's what the Affordable Care Act does.
And I'll just add to that. I think the big question that we're going to finally start to get an answer to over the coming months and year ahead, or years ahead really, is it affordable? Is what they've designed truly affordable in the context of people's day-to-day lives? It's going to move forward from, you know, what the actuaries are saying is affordable and what on paper is affordable. But when people start to, you know, look at their own budgets in terms of what they got to spend on a day-to-day basis just to make ends meet, I think that's where we're going to really find out. And I think it's going to really depend on where people live, because the premiums that were unveiled earlier this week are quite far ranging in terms of their costs.
I think the point Matt makes is a good one, that you're going to hear, we've already heard a lot this week, people arguing, oh, it's fantastically high compared to X. Oh, no, it's below expectations. But all of these are measurements of how much a policy is going to cost you, sure, the exchange based on something that has something else to do with some other piece of the government or of policy. The real measure of it is going to be whether Americans low and moderate income can put this in their budget and live with the share of it that they have to pay. And the fact is that what they're buying, most of what's going to be offered through the exchanges, isn't as comprehensive as the kind of policy most people expect when they get it through their employers. And even though it involves big subsidies, they still have to pay quite a bit of money. For a family of four, $50,000 buying a silver plan. I think they've got to cough up $3,400 for that. Now the plan itself is going to cost $10,000, so the difference is going to be made up by the government. But man, that's $3,400 to somebody's budget who was, sure, making pre-tax $50,000. That's a heave, you know.
Well, there are a couple of things there that I wanted to touch on here. First off, we're looking at people who, in some cases, may not have had benefits whatsoever. And as I go through the site itself, healthcare.gov, one of the first things that you do is fill out a questionnaire that determines what price range you're going to fall into, whether or not you're going to get more assistance or less assistance. Second thing is there are companies out there now who, because healthcare is so expensive, are now dumping the dependents and only insuring the primary insurance holder or the employer. UPS is a big one. Wegmans, I believe, is no longer going to handle benefits for their part-time employees. And the list grows daily. Yeah. These are now expenses that not just those people who may not have the money to be able to handle it, I dare say almost every American could be at some point touched by this.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I think we have yet to really see how it's going to unfold, and this is going to be probably over several years. And I mean, you're starting to see it with whether it's, you've seen Walgreens, you've seen IBM, you've seen Home Depot, and other companies making different decisions with regard to their benefits,
sure,
that aren't directly necessarily tied to the Affordable Care Act and its implementation. But I think the Affordable Care Act has kind of stirred the pot.
I was going to say, a little too coincidental, if you ask me. Well,
I don't even think it's coincidental. I think it's opened the door for a conversation or for decisions that I think otherwise they've been unwilling to make, or it's been politically difficult for them to make. And I think this is providing that opportunity to have that discussion and make decisions that maybe they've wanted to make for some time.
Provides that parachute.
I think one of the things that we're seeing as we look at this law is that it turns out to have hit at a moment of really where there a lot of forces coming into play on health insurance in general, and so that in some ways that's worked for the law, that's worked for keeping it in place and getting it implemented. I mean, you actually are seeing some reductions in the growth of healthcare costs. You are seeing some different behaviors on the part of providers that may result in those slowdown in the growth of healthcare costs being more permanent rather than just temporary. But this is a case where what Matt was just talking about was a case where there are changes that are going to be attributed to the law, where the law makes no mention of this stuff, but the companies making the changes specifically cite the Affordable Care Act both as the reason why they're making the changes because it's adding to costs, and as the model they've decided to adopt, sort of exchanges for all their private employees. Now, I'll tell you, this is something that will make a big difference, and maybe not such a good difference, to individual Americans. The insurance industry should be thrilled with it. This is what Walgreens did. Is it took it announced it's going to take 160,000 employees who are now in a self-insured plan. That means the company puts the money aside and covers the health benefits, and an insurance company only sort of comes in as a paper pusher, a third-party administrator, and it's going to put them in a private exchange that looks a lot like the ACA exchanges. Has nothing to do with the ACA exchanges, and the company is going to give a subsidy so that people can go buy their own policies. But the kicker for the insurance industry is those are going to be fully insured policies. It's not going to be self-insured. They're going to buy this stuff from insurance companies. So this means that a market that with the ACA might have been an additional 25 or 30 or so million people, and when you add Medicaid, which is largely the provided for by insurance companies and managed care firms, you might get up to 60 or 70 million people. Well, hell, this could open up the doors for the entire employer-sponsored insurance system. Hundreds of millions of new people coming into fully insured products for the insurance.
That was going to be my question. Does this basically open the door for that now? People look at this model and go, if you can do it, we can do this.
Well, we'll see. Health insurance is a funny thing. There's been no law in place that says, you American employers, you got to give your employees health insurance. Employers have been providing health insurance for Americans for more than a half century because it's part of the compensation package
Sure.
that those employers believe they have to pay to get the people they want. And the employees, us, have expected it from our employers. All of that may change, but the fact is that it's been pretty durable over a long time without any order from the government. It's got to be so. The only thing the government has done to encourage this is it gives a wicked big subsidy to employers for providing employer-sponsored insurance.
I know that I know of several defense contractors, small defense contracting companies, who may not necessarily be able to afford paying for the gigantic policy or picking up a large portion of it. So what they do is similar to what Walgreens does, is they give each employee X amount of money to go out and shop around. It's a fair amount of money that they're giving them to go ahead and do this. As I take a look at the other side of the coin, talking about the people who are going to be receiving the money, looking at hospitals, looking at doctors' offices and such. Does this change their compensation in any way, given that more people are now coming in with insurance? I look at Jersey City Medical Center, for example, very poor area of New Jersey. Lots of people coming in using public assistance, using Medicaid, using things that are coming in with no insurance whatsoever is probably a better example. And that hospital would receive funding from the government to take care of those who were coming in as indigent, so to speak.
Sure. Well, in those circumstances, it certainly ought to be to the financial benefit of those hospitals because they are now getting payment where they otherwise wouldn't, or they'd have to chase after it and they'd only get a fraction of it. So if you're a hospital in a state that is expanding Medicaid in addition to these either state-run or federal exchanges, they are definitely should be benefiting from this. But if you're a hospital based in a state that is not expanding Medicaid, you're still dealing with the uninsured. They're still coming to mm-hmm. your door because they're required to treat those people. You're not getting the expansion dollars from Medicaid where a significant percentage of those uninsured would be eligible for Medicaid. And you're still getting reductions in payment from Medicare that were included in the Affordable Care Act to help pay for the expansion of insurance benefits to begin with. So a lot of it is going to depend where they are situated geographically and in terms of whether or not they're going to benefit or not.
And let me pick up on the other half of your question.
Sure.
You sort of asked two questions. One had to do with people and what these changes might mean for compensation,
sure.
right? And
sure.
the other had to do with hospitals and what kind of compensation they're going to get. Look, it's possible that these changes occur in the way people receive their employer-sponsored insurance and that employers continue to be as generous with the subsidies. I think it's possible, but I don't think it's very likely. The change will happen slowly over time, but I mean the idea if other companies follow Walgreens, and it's not just Walgreens, it's Darden's Restaurant, it's Sears, it's for retirees, IBM and Time Warner. If others follow that model, you've built in the conditions for what happened to people in the retirement area, where we used to have pensions that basically promised us a certain amount of money for as long as we lived, and now we have 401ks, for which we get some contribution from our employers, but which we have to contribute to, and which we have to, if we live longer than the tables show we're supposed to live, we may well run out of money. So that there are two things that are going to happen if in fact healthcare moves in that direction. One is that the real compensation, the total pay package of people, is not going to be as big as it was. But the other is the risk, where the risk of outliving your money lies, is or outliving your health benefits or outstripping your health benefits, is now going to be with individuals and not with the company. And both of these kinds of decisions about retirement and about how much money you need for retirement and about health insurance and how much health insurance do you need are really mind-bendingly complicated. They're complicated even for the experts, and it's going to be something to see if Americans can sort this through in a way that leaves them protected and leaves their families protected.
But I would say one thing where we're seeing that actually playing out in terms of some of the data is you've seen a steady increase over the last several years in what are called these high deductible health plans, where it's now, I think, close to 20%, 20 to 30% of all plans are these high deductible plans where you, the individual, are incurring a much larger share of the cost, whether it's in the form of coinsurance, premiums, copays, deductibles, et cetera. And you do see that mirrored on the Affordable Care Act exchanges in terms of you have platinum level plans, gold, silver, bronze. The benefits themselves aren't that different from plan to plan. I mean, there's some differences, but they all have to provide a core set of essential health benefits. Sure. But the difference really is in terms of the share of those costs being borne by the individual. So the lowest premiums, on the bronze plans, on the face of it, you might say, okay, I think I can afford that, but they're going to have a lot larger share of the cost that the individual is going to have to bear compared to the platinum level plans. So, and that's part of the choices we'll have to see what people are drawn to.
And one of the ironies here is that in fact, if you're very wealthy, if you have millions of dollars, if you know, wealthy people,
he's looking at me like, yeah, I've got millions of dollars. You see that?
you can find people who don't have insurance. You know, sure, they have fancy houses, and you know, one burns down, I got the money to rebuild it. Why should I pay an insurance company, right? So you can think, well, you know, yeah, I can take that risk. But the people who the Affordable Care Act and these health insurance exchanges were first and foremost built for, these are precisely the families that can't take a hit of a kid getting childhood leukemia and facing hundreds of thousands of dollars of medical bills. It's precisely those kinds of risks that, as you go down the income spectrum, and we're not talking about poor people, we're talking about middle-class Americans, they can wipe you out. And that's precisely what insurance was invented for. So you pay a little now or some now, but you've capped the risk that you're bearing, and you handed it off to an insurance company or somebody else so that you don't get wiped out.
You're listening to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, where my guests are senior healthcare analysts with Bloomberg Government, Mr. Peter Goslin and Matt Berry. 4 years is how long it's going to take to roll this out. If you talk to someone overseas, you might get the response of, what took so long? Why did America wait so long to roll this out? You know, my niece goes to school in Scotland. She's at St. Andrews. She's a student. She's got free health care. The minute she walks across the border, they hand her a card. And, you know, last year I know she got sick. She's, you know, medical issues. And sure, literally, you make a phone call. They tell you what hospital to go to, and they see you within minutes. What would you say about that? The fact that, the doors just opened this week. And we're just now signing people up.
Let me just say this. Almost everybody in every advanced nation looks at the U.S. on the subject of healthcare,
yeah,
and thinks we're nuts, you know. I mean, and even skip the issue of taking several years to roll this part of the program out, they look at this program, they look at these exchanges in the wackazoid way we're providing these subsidies, and they think we're nuts.
And the reality is, at the end of the day, even after this a multi-year kind of rollout of this plan, is you're still going to have tens of millions of people without insurance.
Yeah.
I mean, that's people think that we're through this. There's going to be universal health insurance,
sure.
And you're still going to have tens of millions that do not have coverage in a few years from now. I mean, I think you're seeing play out this whole week, you know, with this shutdown that started on Tuesday. Of what's going on, and there are deep divisions in this country over why we should be doing this.
And back to the issue of why is it taken so long to roll out? This is an amazingly complicated way to insure people, and besides the political fight that surrounded this,
sure.
and the legal fight, which is still not resolved, but to the extent it was resolved only in June of 2012 with the Supreme Court finding the law constitutional. There's the simple job of getting regulations written that explain how you help people buy insurance so that they have it during 1 year. You determine their eligibility for the help based on the income they make during that year. And then after that year, if you've given them too much help, the IRS takes it back. You know, those are the kind of regulations that really take forever to write, and I'd just say also they take forever to read.
Sure. Gentlemen, thank you very much for being a part of the program. One thing that I've always found completely confusing was this whole affordable. My wife's a nurse, and she's going, well, what is this? I mean, I get it, but I don't get it. What? And I know you two have definitely shed light on me and my wife, and hopefully others as well. And my niece just needs to be quiet.
Or louder.
Or louder. There you go.
Now, like every new law, every new product rollout, there are going to be some glitches in the sign-up process along the way that we will fix. I've been saying this from the start. For example, we found out that there have been times this morning where the site's been running more slowly than it normally will. The reason is because more than 1 million people visited healthcare.gov before 7 in the morning. To put that in context, there were 5 times more users in the marketplace this morning than have ever been on Medicare.gov at one time. That gives you a sense of how important this is to millions of Americans around the country. And that's a good thing. And we're going to be speeding things up in the next few hours to handle all this demand that exceeds anything that we had expected. Consider that just a couple of weeks ago, Apple rolled out a new mobile operating system. And within days, they found a glitch, so they fixed it. I don't remember anybody suggesting Apple should stop selling iPhones or iPads, or threatening to shut down the company if they didn't. That's not how we do things in America. We don't actively root for failure. We get to work, we make things happen, we make them better, we keep going.
And with that, we put the wraps on another edition of Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact. Follow us on Twitter at BGov. Follow me on Twitter at Alan L. Scott. I'll catch you next Thursday at 11 with plenty more to say about the business impact of government actions. For BGov's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, I'm Alan Scott.